Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. What is a paradigm shifter? It's somebody whose work, whose intention, whose goal these days is making a wave in the collective, in the paradigm that we used to be in and helping us over the bridge into the new paradigm, which is a very self-realizing time. And my paradigm shifter today is a wonderful, wonderful woman named Liz Mitten Ryan, whose book, One with the Herd, is cleaning up on all kinds of awards, I hear. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thanks for having me, Veronica.
Oh, I'm just really glad to talk to you because, as I said to you before the show, talking to you is very peaceful and very centering. And I know that you're capable of being in the experience of communication with the whole herd of horses on your wonderful ranch, right?
I am.
And that must take a certain amount of stillness.
Well, I think, you know, the setting itself and being surrounded by these huge, amazing energy beings creates that stillness, that meditative place.
It's not kind of an active doing. It's more of a being in an immersion, isn't it?
It's just living here.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, now, how did you, not necessarily how did you get there, but how did you get into... Were you born with this consciousness of animals and their wisdom?
Yes, as long as I can remember. Animals were, you know, the light of my life.
Really?
People came and went, and, you know, it was no big deal, but I would see an animal. It was just like, oh my goodness, aren't they wonderful? Aren't they amazing? Didn't matter what it was.
And so when did you begin to communicate with them or understand what they said?
Well, that's kind of interesting because it really wasn't until I was halfway through book three and I was woken up in the middle of the night by my first cat that I'd ever had. And I had her for 18 years since before I was born. She was, you know, with our family and she lived until I was 18. And she woke me up and she said, "Do you know why you have this affinity for animals? Do you know why you can communicate? It's because when you came into the world, I was there." And she slept on my crib. And you know how they always say, don't have a cat sleep on the baby's crib.
That's
you know,
right.
You know, they'll sleep on their head. Well, she never slept on my head, but she slept close to my ear. And we communicated. And so I never lost it. I never really did feel distance from animals. I felt like they were my sisters and brothers.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? So tell me about your life. How did you get over to the ranch, and were you always on a ranch? And
no, but I always dreamed of being on a ranch. I was a city kid, and the only time I really got to live my dreams was in the summer. We went to my grandmother's summer house on the ocean and near the woods, and I just thought I was in heaven for the 2 months vacation I was there. And then I got sentenced back to the city and hated every minute of it. So my dream, for as long as I can remember again, was to live in the country and, you know, be surrounded by nature and animals. And so I made several attempts at that as I was raising my children. I raised six children. And
wow, you had six children?
Well, I gave birth to four and inherited two, and we became the Brady Bunch.
That's a bit of a herd in itself, isn't it?
That was my herd at the time. And we lived in the country then. We lived on 13 acres and tried ponies and had the odd horse. And, you know, my children took them to shows. And, you know, we were still very much in that sort of rural setting. But, of course, I didn't have any time to really appreciate it because I was too busy raising six children and running around doing the shopping and the cleaning and the cooking and everything else. So it wasn't until my children were really at the age where they all should have fledged. Most of them had, but, you know, there was a couple of hangers on that I started looking at my life thinking, no. In fact, there was a time when it all became clear to me, and I was going to a women's group, and we were all exploring, you know, where we wanted to go and what we wanted to be in our lives. And we were reading a book at the time called Your Heart's Desire by Sonia Choquette.
Mm-hmm.
It was an amazing book. And there was a place in it where you had to examine your life and look at it from a point of if there was no financial problems at all, if you could have your fondest dream, what would you want? And so I took a look at what a typical day would be, and I wanted to see, you know, just rolling hills, and I wanted to hear my horses, you know, just purring outside my window, and I wanted to just feel that I was completely, you know, enmeshed in nature and you know, the quiet. And so the minute I began to realize that, you know, I loved my life where I was, it was very close to what my heart's desire would be, but it wasn't my heart's desire.
Hmm.
It was like all the forces came into play to make, you know, what I had visualized.
By this time, did you have horses yet?
We had horses, yeah. We had 13 acres, and I had 7 horses at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I had just started, my kids were getting older, so I just started thinking, well, I'll have a breeding operation. We'll, you know, save on taxes. I can be around horses who I love. And so I had just gotten into it and thought, you know, it was fine, except we had really limited space, and there was never enough pasture, and they didn't have the life that I wanted them to have. So when I visualized this bigger dream, you know, it's just like the law of attraction, which everybody's talking about now. And, you know, you hold that desire so firmly, and you speak the word, you see the word, and whatever, and you create in matter with your thoughts.
Mm.
So
the word
all
was
of a
made
sudden,
flesh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, everything, I didn't even plan it. You know, my brother came up to me and said, gee, you know, you've always wanted to live in, you know, way out in the country. Look at these great properties up at, you know, Stump Lake, B.C. And I went, oh, and he took me over to the Internet, and I looked, and Kevin and I were going on vacation. And we said, well, yeah, let's go look. Can't hurt. And we came up here and dragged this poor real estate agent through, 115 degrees in mid-July, to show us every single nook and cranny of this 320-acre property that we discovered.
Wow.
And by the end of that, I looked at Kevin and said, oh, my goodness, this is it. This is where I've always wanted to be. This is unbelievable. And he's looking at me like, oh, my goodness, this is life-changing, I can tell.
Is he with? Was he with you on this project?
Well, he didn't,
I mean, did he
know
want it?
There was a project at this point. Mm-hmm. It was my project, right? Well, it was my awakening. It was my discovery that, you know, I did want something different and more than what we had. And he was too busy. He's an architect. He was busy doing his thing. And, you know, he didn't even notice, really, that this whole process was in place. And so when we got here, he looked at it, too, and he went, oh, my goodness, this is amazing. Because he loves nature as well. He loves walking in the hills and hiking. And so I said, well, I'm going to ask for a sign because I have to have a sign. I have to have something that's going to make it really real to me. And we decided we would camp on the property overnight and just walk it and talk about it and just make sure it was a good fit. And as we were driving up the hill, we crested the hill, and we're driving across this beautiful, open, rolling hill plain to our property. And there was one single cloud in the sky, in this clear blue sky, and it had just silver edges. And all these rays of light were coming down. And I looked at him, and I said, Kevin, is that just our property and only our property that those rays of silver light are coming down on? And he looks at me like, you just can't pull this off. You can't. And we drive through the gate, we drive up the hill, get out of the car, and I look above, and these rays of light are going directly over my head.
Hmm.
And it was so profound and so powerful. I just looked at him. I had goosebumps. I had tears. He looked at me, and he goes, oh, I can't say the word, oh, my God, our life is about to change. He just knew it. You know, there was no questioning it. You know, when you have that strong, an intuitive feeling that, you know, this is it.
Were you scared at all? And were you thinking, like, wow, this is enormous?
No, I was just overjoyed. I was like, oh, my God, this is so miraculous. This is so amazing. Thank you, God. I'm like, wow. It was just right. It just felt like this is how we should all be living our lives. We're powerful spiritual beings. We should all be manifesting in matter all the time. We should all be living our heart's desire.
You're right, absolutely right. Have you believed that for a long, long time, or were you just coming into that?
No, I've had a very close relationship with God forever.
Great.
I've always felt that, you know, I walked and talked and spoke with God and listened to that intuitive, you know, nudge you get, which is spirit, you know, flowing
oh, yeah.
through you mm-hmm. in the same way that instinct, you know, is present in animals. Animals listen to it all the time. It's really obvious for them. It's like, oh, my God, you get a nudge, you do it. Whereas humans get the nudge all the time and go, oh, well, you know, I can't afford it. I need to look after my family. You know, they have all the, you know, the left brain reasons for not doing it.
And I always think of the, like, the tsunami, the animals that knew enough to just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And the villagers that knew enough to follow them.
Exactly. Well, mm-hmm. those are people who live in nature, who are in touch with animals and nature. They know when the animals tell you, do it.
Well, tell me, Liz, didn't you go through a whole bunch of educational things where you might have lost touch with some of this?
You mean earlier in my life when
yeah.
I was trying to become a human?
Well, I know you got a degree and so on, didn't you?
Well, I went to art school and I did a little stint in nursing and I went to university, but I never really did find my path. Every step of the way, I'd be going, no, this is not it. I always knew I wanted to be a mother and I totally enjoyed that. But I always knew that I was missing, you know, something very vital and important to my life,
mm-hmm.
and that was being alone with animals and nature.
Hmm. So once you moved to 350 acres, is that right?
20, actually.
320.
Yeah.
Wouldn't make much difference from my perspective. Like, wow, that's still a lot, eh?
Pretty big.
So then what happened?
Well, then what was really interesting is my husband, who was kind of hesitant about this whole idea of changing our lives because he had a really, you know, a successful business where we lived. And I did as well. I was an artist and, you know, I did a lot of work with the environment and different groups. And, you know, I was making a really good living where we were. And he was like, come on, be sensible. Like, we're going to move into the middle of nowhere. Like, who's going to find us? How is this going to work? We, you know, like trying to put all those left brain, you know, sort of
limitations
on everything. I said, I don't care. I've been called. I have a sign. It's all going to be fine. Well, as it turned out, we did move into the middle of nowhere. We had raw land at the time when we moved on the property.
No housing?
There was just a fence line, and it was pasture land.
Hmm.
And we put up a wall tent to start, so we just had the wood floor, the canvas sides and roof. And I was there alone a lot of the time because Kevin was paddling, running back and forth to our old life to try and maintain his business and make a smooth transition and do all those things. So I had this incredible opportunity to have zero to do in the way of, you know, housework or anything. I'd pull my sleeping bag up, I'd hang my clothes on a nail, and I'd go out and follow the herd and just walk the land with my dogs and just get that opportunity to really absorb everything that my horses were telling me.
And this is seven horses?
Well, at the time, yeah, I had seven when I moved. Now my mare gave birth that following spring. Yeah, so there were seven when I first got here, and they were city horses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I thought, well, are they even going to know what to do on this land? Like, you know, what are they going to do when I let them out of the trailer? Are they just going to run away?
Oh, tell the story about them getting onto the trailer.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the other story, is when I discovered this wonderful place and I went back and I gathered my herd and I said to them, guys, we're moving to horse heaven. You're not going to believe this place. It's amazing. And I just gave them pictures of where they were going and how it was going to be. And I mean, this went on for a few months prior to our moving. Well, they had never been in a trailer in their whole life. They'd just, you know, been on my property. When two trailers arrived to load these horses and bring them up, the people were just totally amazed that the horses just literally almost trotted on the trailer. They were so excited to go because I had just completely primed them. I told them it was like, you guys, you can't wait to get there. So when we get here and we're unloading, I'm thinking, oh, my God, like they'll probably just run off the trailer and I'll never see them again. They'll just keep going. And they didn't. They were just so wise about it. They just wandered off the trailer and they all grouped in a herd. And then the herd went and discovered the property bit by bit. And, you know, they just knew what to do. It was just inherent.
And at this point, you were already able to discuss things and to talk to them.
Well, I guess I was always, yeah, I always have talked to my animals like they're humans. You know, and I walk around the house, you know, talking out loud to them a lot. And I totally believe that, you know, not only do they understand most of our language, they completely connect to the pictures in our minds. So if you want to develop a relationship with your animal, and I mean, most people who have pets are going to appreciate that their pet sends them a picture, you know, or they send their pet a picture. And that pet always knows when they're going to be fed, when they're going to go for a walk. You don't have to say anything. There's another level of communication.
I'm trying to decide inside myself whether or not I'm doing that well enough with my dog. New practice.
Well, the other thing I discovered is the more you believe in it, the stronger it gets.
Hmm.
And I've gotten to a point now with my herd where I can walk out there, and they're all sort of, now I live above and beside my herd in a suite, you know, attached to the barn. And so I just walk down the stairs, and I'm in the barn, and I'll just give them a thought, or I'll just catch their eye, and I'll crook a finger, and I'll say, you know, come here, let's go. They get it. They're like, the more I do that, the more, you know, I'm just really appealing to that level of just extreme sensitivity that you're below phase one, as Pirelli says, you know. You're at this point where they pick it up like a fly landing on their skin.
Hmm.
You know, they're so sensitive. So I just get lighter and lighter and lighter, and I'm just now sending them thoughts.
Well, tell me this. Have you had them all since birth? Because some horses like people that have been really hurt can sometimes harden off, right?
Well, you know what's really interesting is I have had, like, I started out with my four mares who I got as two-year-olds, and they had been raised on a big property, so they didn't really have hardly any interaction with people. So at least they were like a clean slate when I started.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I bred my babies. So my babies are born into my arms, and they're loved, and they don't have junk. They don't have stuff that I have to get through because they trust me totally. But I have since had friends bring horses here and say, can you talk to my horse? You know, everybody says she's this problem horse and whatever. The minute I walk in, like I'll put them in a ring or something, I'll walk in there and I'll recognize them as amazing spiritual beings. It's the first thing I do. And I let them know they can trust me. You know, I always make it fun for them. I make it rewarding. I just lather them with treats and scratches. I make them feel like, oh my God, you're okay. You're okay. There's no threat here.
And how do you show them that they can trust you by sending pictures?
Well, I'll just spend, you know, the time to let them know that by my body language, by the fact that I send them, I suppose, thoughts of, I totally appreciate who you are. You're an amazing being. You know, I love and respect you. And then I'll go and I'll start just scratching all the places they like and just rubbing my hand on their body and giving them treats and making them feel like totally relaxed and at ease and happy to be in my company. Most of the time people will approach a horse with an agenda and they'll be like, okay, they're hiding a halter behind their back. They're trying to sneak up on the horse. They're trying to get it on their face because they then have to cross-tie them and groom them. Then they have to ride them. They want that horse to do something. So their whole relationship with the horse is based on them wanting something from the horse Well, of course the horse is going to be suspicious. And then when they ask the horse for it, and the horse doesn't understand or gets confused, they get punished. So how can they have a good relationship with that human?
Sorry, I'm one of those people that didn't turn her cell phone off. How horrifying.
Oh, no.
It's so when somebody brings a horse for you to visit, have they ever brought a horse that, like, is disturbed? I guess what I'm interested in is...
Oh, yes, I've had horses that people say, this is a disturbed horse. This is a really, you know, problem horse. And they melt like butter when I go in there and I play with them and I recognize them. Because they know that I'm not like all those other people who are going to go in there and expect them to perform or expect them to do something for me. I'm just going to go in there and explore a relationship with them, you know, based on trust, based on truth, based on, you know, let's explore something together and find out where we go.
Well, is that, I guess what's interesting is, like, are you able to, does it stick when they take the horse away? Are you able
to... Oh, I think it makes a huge difference, every experience. Well, you've had experiences in your life that totally change your life.
Right.
So that's what I see, you know, and I've met other horse whisperers who get it as well, who totally, you know, connect to the horse, and the horse goes, oh, my God, someone recognizes us. You know, there's very few people who really recognize that we are all one in the family of spirit. Mm-hmm. We're all spiritual equals. You know, we might speak a different language. We might have different customs. You know, we might have fur and hooves as opposed to skin and nails or whatever. But we all come from that same place, that same, you know, my horses call it the all. And the all, they say, is, you know, that higher level of mind where all wisdom, all truth, all everything flows from. And that flow, that creative life force that is within all life, doesn't matter whether you're a flower or a tree or a horse or a snake or whatever, you manifest that that same creative life force. There's only one consciousness. So you might take that consciousness and you might make your own personal little adaptation of that consciousness, but there's still only one consciousness. And when you really understand that and you start recognizing that in all life, it's like life opens up to you.
And did you learn this, or is this just innate with you? And I noticed I was reading about how you did energy work with birds and so on. Did you learn that, or is that just...
Well, forever I've had this huge desire to know the secrets of the universe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to just walk a normal path. Mm-hmm. I wanted to walk an enlightened path. I wanted to, you know, to understand why I was here, you know, why we're all here, and I wanted to do something miraculous. So I've read, you know, spiritual books as long as I've read, and I've just absorbed whatever I can. But I believe that having that quiet, meditative time in nature with animals probably is the biggest leap you can make. Because it's all there. You just have to quiet your busy mind enough to absorb it.
I agree with you entirely. How about healing? Is this approach probably does an awful lot to healing horses, doesn't it?
Well, when you understand that, you know, on a spiritual level, everything is well, everything's fine, everything's perfect, well, then you're creating in matter with your thoughts. So you create well, perfect, fine thoughts, and then everything follows from there. So I've had experiences with my horses where vets have come in, and, you know, I had one horse born with contracted tendons, which is quite common. And the vets all came in and said, oh, my God, we have to cast him. We have to lock him up in a stall. And, you know, from there it went to, oh, no, we have to operate, we have to cut the tendons. And I started to just listen to the herd And they said, no, just let him run with the herd. He'll fix himself. And so I'm listening to this, and I didn't actually make the decision. The horses did. They broke him out of his little, you know, place where he was locked up. And he ran with the herd, and he came back the next day like two-thirds better than he was. I was just looking at it going, oh, my God. He just threw those shackles off, and he ran. And his body had the wisdom to know what to do when he needed to use his leg.
Wow. And he was just two days old by then, hey?
Oh, no, he was weeks old by then, because the vets just kept putting casts on him and locking him up and not letting him move. And you know, he finally, his mom and he finally just got broken out and ran with the herd. And I saw them disappearing over the hill, and I went, what can I do? But I felt like that was the right thing. And then he came back the next day, but so much better. It was unbelievable. And at that point, I just went, okay, go. Go. I'm not listening, you know, to, you know, the voice of science or whatever. I'm going to just let the herd heal you. And he came around completely. His hoof became completely normal. He was this gorgeous, you know, 17-hand, beautiful boy with perfect feet.
Hmm.
You know, at the end of a very, you know, short time.
Wow. Do you shoe your horses?
No.
And
no, I don't understand. You know, and there's this new book out, Soul of the Horse, that everybody's talking about, and he's a proponent of, no, it's all barefoot, and why are people locking their horses up? Why are people using bits and spurs and whips, and why are they putting metal shoes on them? And it's totally true. My horses are all barefoot, their feet are all strong and well, and they run on, you know, rocky ground and meadows, and they're up on the hills and the cliffs, and there's, you know, lots of rocks up there. I ride them all over. They've never had a problem. They have perfect, healthy feet, and I ride them in halters. You know, they don't need all these sort of fear-based contraptions that humans have put on them.
And expensive contraptions.
Well, exactly. And yeah, it makes a lot of business for the farriers, for sure, when they have to, you know, nail shoes on every so often. I have a wonderful natural farrier, and he comes and does everybody and, you know, just trims them, leaves the frogs natural. And their feet are really healthy. They're all just have hooves like iron.
Wow. For anybody listening who doesn't know, this is Liz Mitten Ryan, and her book, at least this book that we're talking about today, we're waiting for your next book to come. This one is One with the Herd, which Liz has had marvelous sharings. This book is so beautiful, with pictures of your ranch and your animals, but also pictures that you've painted, which I just think are so absolutely amazing. And your website is beautiful as well, isn't it?
Well, I also have a DVD on my website, which shows, if you actually go to onewiththeherd.com, it'll open at the DVD, and it shows how I interact with the horses, which is also at liberty. Mm-hmm. They follow, they enjoy playing. We have a great time together. And, you know, I'm not a performance person. I don't do dressage or jumping other than out in the pasture in the hills. But the horses and I have a wonderful time. And we
there's no fear about horses, you know, stepping on people or biting people or any of that.
Well, you know, when you come to my place, and actually it shows that in the DVD as well.
Mm-hmm.
Visitors come, children come, and the horses love it. And I have my whole herd just free. When you walk in my paddock, there is 13 horses everywhere. And what is so wonderful is when the children come and they'll go over, they pick the baby horses, and they'll go over and they'll sit down with them and hug them and spend time with them and talk to them and form like a kids club around a baby horse.
Hmm.
And all the bigger horses, you know, are beyond that. And the kids will go, no, no, you're too old. You can't. No, we're playing with the kids club right now. You guys go. And these huge big horses like go, all right, oh, whatever you say. And they wander off and do their thing.
And the little kids can ride the horses okay.
Well, I put my grandkids on my horses. I've actually just recently got Shetland ponies. And they're quite cute. Quite interesting, though, because you can't really get on and reform them at all. You have to trust the kids to ride them. So that's another whole...
What is it? Because as soon as you said Shetland ponies, I thought, don't I hear that they're often angry?
Well, a lot of people neglect ponies. You know, they're just a pony. You know, they get stuffed out in the field and they get foundered and whatever. But these two little ponies are really cute. They're really special. And what I discovered about them was they totally understood what I was saying from the moment they got here.
Oh, really?
And walk on and whoa and move the hind end and move the front end. And then I began to think, you know what? I'm just getting better at the language. It's not like I have to teach the horse anymore or teach myself to communicate to the horse. I know how to communicate, and they understand me.
And so what is the process of communicating? It's partly it's pictures, but isn't it a frequency or an energy flow?
Well, it's many things. You know, like communication in a herd of horses is body language, and it's verbal, and it's telepathic. So animals are always, they're just a clean, empty pond, you know, and when images come into their mind, they send it to each other. And it's very clear, and it's very exact. And they're so absolutely truthful that when animals speak, they speak with every part of their being. So there's not only the vocal part of it, there's the picture, and there's the body language that goes with it. So there's no lies in it. Animals don't lie, right? People lie a lot, and people pretend a lot because they're always trying to impress other people or think they're maybe impressing their horse. But horses see right through them.
So that's the whole thing about equine therapy, isn't it? Is coming into integrity with your
absolutely
thoughts and feelings.
That's what it's about.
So tell me something about horse families. Like, how are they in family?
They have such amazing close families, and that's what makes me really sad about how most horses are kept. Because when I look at my herd, their family is everything. It's no different than our families are everything to us. And they care about, you know, their children and their grandchildren. And within the herd, you have, you know, your lead mare, who is your benevolent, wise ruler, almost like the matriarch in a family.
Is she always the older one?
Usually the one who's been there the longest. And also the most intelligent and the most caring, because the lead mare is the one who looks after the herd, who takes them to pasture, who you know, makes sure everybody is fitting in together. She'll discipline, you know, a member who's not being fair or kind to another member. But
how do they discipline?
She'll just cast them out. She'll say, yeah, go. When you can smarten up and behave yourself, you can come back. And that's what Monty Roberts based his whole, you know, his way of training horses on, was the lead mare ostracizing, you know, someone who was not paying attention to the rules of the herd. And then when that horse becomes penitent and, you know, drops its head and licks and chews, she says, oh, okay, then, you can come back.
So have you used that technique as well?
I've worked with it. I already have such a great relationship with my herd that I don't really have to do that with them. They already just absolutely respect me as they would the lead mare. You know, I find that I can just walk through the herd and everybody just knows that I love them, I care about them, I'm looking after them, and they respect me and love me for it. But, you know, after that, there's the dominant mare, which people sometimes get confused with the lead mare. And the dominant mare is the one who cares passionately about her family. And I have one in my herd who, you know, has lost babies and who just so cares deeply about everything that when a herd member comes or goes or someone new tries to enter the herd, she's the police. She's the one who says, no, 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 you guys have to listen to me. You have to pay attention to me. There's a pecking order in this herd. It's all for our own good. And if you don't listen, I'm going to discipline you. And she is really harsh. When she disciplines someone, it's, you know, two hooves and a chunk out of them.
Hmm.
Because for her, it's important to maintain that herd discipline for everybody's well-being.
And she comes to that position because she's had life experience?
Well, I don't know how they come to the position. There just always seems to be in every herd a lead mare, a dominant mare, and the stallion. And those are sort of the herd elders.
Hmm.
And they have the herd's welfare at heart. And so the lead mare is the kind and benevolent one who leads them to food and water. The dominant mare is the one who maintains discipline in the ranks. And the stallion is the one who sends them. He leads from behind, and he'll, you know, protect the herd. And he also looks after the babies.
Hmm.
The stallion is the father of the babies, so it's his job to make sure that his herd is moving along, following the lead mare, and everybody's well.
And you only have one stallion?
Well, I actually had one stallion, but he's... when my stallions reach about a year old, they get gelded very quickly because they're related to everybody in the whole family. So almost yearly, I'll get one of my babies who grows up and goes, ha, I'm the stallion now, and I'm going to breed my mother and my aunt, my sister, and everybody I know. I go, no, 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 that's not going to work.
So who do you breed with? Who do you?
I do AI, usually, like artificial insemination. So I'll pick the perfect horse that I think would be just wonderful. And then I get it shipped up. I get cooled semen shipped here, and the vet puts it in. And it's so funny, though, because I talk to my horses about this, and I say, oh, you guys, you know, and I know who wants to be a mom because, you know, they'll come forward and just tell me they want to be a mom. They're ready.
Hmm.
And when the vet comes, I have like a breeding sort of stall in my barn, and I have the girls lining up outside the door when the vet comes to race in to get in that breeding stall so they can have a baby. The vet's going, oh, my God, I've never seen anything like it.
So how many do you get impregnated at a time?
Well, I have done as many as five. I had five babies 1 year, and that was 3 years ago. But that was a bit much because what I find is, although I thought I was going to breed and sell, I can't because they're all my family now. And I can't sell somebody's son or daughter, or they care so deeply.
Mm-hmm. And they grieve. And do they grieve?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They care in the same way we do about everyone. You know, imagine if your child was 6 months old, it was pulled off you, and you never got to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
Or you got to spend 2 years with it, and then it was sold, and you never got to communicate with it again. You know, it's horrible the way we think animals don't care and don't feel.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you're exactly the same as an animal, and put yourself in their place and think what we do to them.
Now that really hurts, doesn't it?
Because we are, you know, we are exactly that same consciousness.
Well,
and
that's,
we all care deeply.
That swirls me back into mating. Then somebody was telling me one time that the best horse foals and so on are created romantically.
Mm-hmm.
That when the horses are allowed to mate romantically, like they woo each other, and apparently they do.
Well, that's sort of interesting because I watch my girls, and in my herd, it's just pure lust. They will lust. When they come into their cycle, it'll be like, where's the man? There's got to be a man somewhere. I'll find a man somewhere. And, I mean, having these new little ponies, these little Shetlands, it's hysterical because I have these big 17-hand warmbloods, and Arthur and Merlin, who are the ponies, the minute the girls go into heat, they're like, oh, Arthur, Merlin, oh, my God, you're so adorable. I've never seen anyone as cute as you. And they're just like put their backside right in Arthur's face, and Arthur's looking like, what would I do, girls? And the minute they go out of heat, they're like, see ya. I'm out of here. So I don't know about
deep
the
down, they're shallow, huh?
Yeah, I think.
Well, the story I heard was that this group, but anyway, you know, it's everybody's different stories. But she told me that having the romance was actually quite selective. So I haven't heard that anywhere else. But that's
well,
it.
I know there is horse love, and mm-hmm. I've seen it, and I've seen it through, you know, mothers for their children, and, you know, sisters for their sisters, and all that.
And buddies, and they have really close friends.
It's no different than us. They mm-hmm. have friends, they have children, they have, you know, they care deeply about everything. And mm-hmm. I have seen romantic love, totally. But I've also seen pure lust. So it's no different than us. You know, we think that it should be different, but it's not.
Hmm. Isn't that amazing, hey?
But now, my guys, when I want to breed them, I tell them about how amazing the sire can be. And I normally pick sires who just have the most amazing spirit, confirmation, everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're wonderful, wonderful beings. And I give my girls the mental picture and I say, here it is, girls, you're going to have the most amazing baby. And they're all just like, okay.
How are they when another one of the horses is foaling? Do they have that kind of, like, how are they socially? Do they look after each other?
Oh, the whole herd. When one of the horses is foaling, the whole herd is at attention.
Hmm.
And I have a foaling stall that is just adjacent to my main paddock where everybody is.
Hmm.
It's just sort of beside, and I have sort of bunk beds above it, you know, in my hayloft. So I can sleep above, and I know exactly when they're foaling, and I'm down there, and I'm helping the mare, you know, I'm helping the baby come out, and I'm towel drying it off, and the mare's licking, and I'm towel drying, and she's licking, and you know, we're a family, but the whole process, the whole herd stops, they lean over the edge of that birthing stall, and they are absolute rapt attention on that birthing until that baby is born.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's part of their herd. They care deeply about that new baby.
Well,
and you know, a couple of weeks later, I'll give the baby time to just bond with its mom and understand that language and have their relationship develop. Then I let them out with the herd, and the whole herd looks after the babies.
Wow.
It's really lovely to see.
And even the geldings, do the geldings go make sure that the herd is due?
You hear these stories about geldings being awful to babies? Well, in my herd, that doesn't happen. My geldings normally, you know, are really close to the mare who's given birth.
Hmm.
And I have one gelding who's so cute because he was in love with the mare who gave birth.
Aww.
He thought he was the dad. So he took, you know, on the bringing up of this baby, you know, as his.
Hmm.
And the other ones who aren't quite so close, they're kind of like benevolent uncles.
So when you say he took it on as if it were his, it's like he disciplining and is pushing the little one around.
No, just like looking after her when her mom was busy doing something else.
Mm.
He would go and say, come on, Mika, come with me. I'll look after you.
Aww.
You know, if she was sleeping and the mom had wandered off, he'd make sure. He'd go back and check and say, come on. I mean, he fathered the baby. Like, the boys in the herd, their job is to look after their offspring.
Mm.
Which you don't ever hear about. You hear these horror stories about stallions tearing up babies and killing babies. And I can only think that that has to be under dire circumstances, that there isn't enough food or that baby is crippled or has some serious injury and they're kindly doing it in. Because I don't see any of that.
But I think also, sort of like people get aberrative behavior when they've been abused or hurt or limited somehow. And
a limited opportunity somehow.
There's a wonderful quote here on page 50 in your book, which I think is a wonderful book, everybody, One with the Herd, A Spiritual Journey. Anyway, the quote that I'm liking here at this point is, if you were to let go of your concerns for self for even a moment, the boundaries being just a thought would disappear. And then you would experience as we do. And that was spoken by the horse, right?
That was, limited edition.
And
my
so I was just
baby.
Wondering if you would give us some of the messages. So just give us some messages, because here's what my guides were saying just earlier. Just before this, I usually do some channeling. And they were saying that the consciousness, as the vibrations move on the planet with the universe and so on, everything's kind of speeding up. Then the horses and the horse's sensitivity is allowed to be awakened by many right now, that their herd consciousness is moving very fast as well.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I believe the animals are leading the way at this moment.
Great.
Yeah, they have a lot to teach us.
Well, I thought you might have some nice snippets for us, because I know your next book is all is all spoken through, is animal speaking, it's the horses speaking, right?
Well, The Truth According to Horses is book two. And after I had, you know, communicated book one, they basically came to me and said, we have a book that we want you to write for us. So mm-hmm. book two, they have given me the entire thing. I think I wrote the introduction. And it is like a guidebook to life written by horses for humans.
Aww. Can you share some of it with us?
Oh, book two? Oh, my God.
Or just
anybody who would like to read some excerpts can go on the site, mm-hmm. and you go to either, well, you can go to onewiththeherd.com, or you could go to lizmittenryan.com, and then go to books, and there's a choice of the three books that have been written. The Truth According to Horses is book two, and just click on that, and you can read some chapter samples. You can read, you know, what the horses are saying, and it is mind-blowing. It is amazing stuff. It's mm-hmm. like if anybody's ever read The Course in Miracles, and you get this information, and you think, oh, my God, I need a guide to The Course in Miracles to help me understand what's being said. It was stuff that came through so quickly mm-hmm. that when I'd finished writing it, I'd look at it and go, oh, my God, I got to reread that and reread it. And then reread it again to even comprehend the depth of what was being said.
Well, I'm going to be reading that when we're done here.
Oh, I'll send you a proof. I actually have The Truth According to Horses at the proof stage.
Wonderful. I also wanted to ask another thing. Is I bet you have, say I'm going to see some horses. I know a lot of people these days with horses, and I long to be back with my hands on them. I love the smell of horses as well. But when we approach a horse, and they aren't all living in your herd, so they haven't all been treated with that integrous respect that you have and that spiritual understanding. How would we approach to improve our rapport with horses and ease them as well?
Well, what I find really interesting is that old cowboy saying, never look a horse in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I would coach people to absolutely look a horse right in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And be absolutely truthful with your thoughts when you're doing that. Look them in the eye with reverence, with respect, with, you know, a desire to communicate and to understand. And that horse will look at you like, oh, my God, I've finally been recognized by a human.
Hmm. And you recommend that we see them in their great spiritual presence.
Every single thing that we ever meet in this world is God in a different disguise.
Right.
So if you approach everything as if you were meeting God for the first time, it's going to totally change, you know, how you see the world and how the world sees you.
Mm. That's really true. Now tell me this, because I'm having to draw this to a close and I'm so enjoying it. But are you giving a workshop, or do you do that, or are there ways people can learn more from you besides the books and the website, which are quite full already, aren't they?
Well, I do have a guest house. It's not all that huge, and I do, you know, invite people who really, really want to come and experience the horses to experience them, and I am booking up quite quickly this year, but it's not a formal workshop. I don't, you know, claim to be able to teach somebody about it. I would just make it available for them to come and be in the presence of the horses, who I think are the real teachers.
Hmm. How wonderful. So it's One with the Herd is the first book, and the other books we're going to read about on the website, onewiththeherd.com. And I want to say thank you so much, Liz. My intention is we're coming up to stay in your guest house, so I'll be in touch with you.
Oh, I certainly hope so. We'll have a great time.
And many, many blessings for all the work you're doing. It's just so elevating for not only the animals, but all of us to grow into that comprehension that you're making a difference with.
Thank you so much, Veronica.
Thanks for being a paradigm shifter.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was really uplifting. I wanted to get on a horse, but we don't have a horse. We have a rocking chair, and that, I guess that'll do right now. I will be on with Jackie Salvitti on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. This is Veronica Entwistle saying I will be on with Jackie Salvitti and the team her team has been channeling every week these days, and we're talking about, I'm not sure what we're talking about this week, but the conversations have been very deep and very profound teachings, and moving us through the turbulence of these times and how to cope with your own integrity in these times. Tune in next Tuesday at 4 p.m. for Radiance by Design. I'm not sure what we're going to discuss then, but I always like to have a call-in show talking about you. I think we're going to get into the Merkaba and some of the sacred geometric stuff and calls from you and what it is you want to talk about. And then at 5 o'clock, we're talking to Deborah Stewart. Now, this was Liz Mitten-Ryan, and she's in Canada, and I was from Canada. I am from Canada, but I'm now living in the States, have been for 22 years. And my friend Deborah Stewart is going to be talking to you from Montreal, so she's also from Canada, and we met her living in the States, and she's now doing a stint in Canada. And her situation's really exciting. Her website is oxybliss.com, and what Deborah and her last partner worked with was raising the fields and frequency through a number of different techniques, and what she's got is jewelry, and she's got some machines that can help remove wrinkles and so on, but basically change the energy, change the reality, and she's got some tools and some beauty stuff and so on that are really having an impact. She's a strong metaphysician, long-term Lazarus student, and has lived all over the world. It's very exciting to talk to her. Finally, you will also feel a high frequency talking to her because, going back to Radiance by Design, we're after that, aren't we? We're wanting to lift, raise our personal frequency and meet up with the reality we would prefer to create for the higher consciousness of the entire collective. So I've really enjoyed talking to Liz Mitten-Ryan. Check her, onewiththeherd.com. And my website is picking up speed. We're fixing it up bit by bit, so go into www, I hear you don't have to say that anymore, veronicaentwistle.com, E-N-T-W-I-S-T-L-E, and you'll get snippets of some of the radio shows, and you'll get the latest in what we're doing, and it's only partially done. So any ideas you've got, email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle. If you'd like a session with the guides and angels, want to work to a higher frequency yourself, and bring some of your gifts out of hiding and evolve yourself, the guides and angels are absolutely precious and wonderful, can help you bring out some of the truth of self. So I'll say goodnight for now, and much love to you all. Send blessings to all of you. And we'll talk to you next week. And I'll see some of you on Thursday night. Many blessings.